off his body.
It was caught in a touchdown.
Most people, Friday is just a day before the weekend. But after this Friday, neighborhood never ends.
Football Fridays are on the Fan.
The Denver Broncos are heading to the Super Bowl.
It's a Bud Light Football Friday on the Fan.
Football is a rough game and often a cruel one.
Time to get you pumped for the pigskin.
Bud Light, the official beer sponsor of the NFL. The perfect beer for whatever happens.
And as we gear up for our football weekend.
1, 2, 3, go!
On Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan.
You know I'm getting the ball. They know I'm getting the ball tonight, too.
We can't wait.
Oh, I'm getting the ball. Oh! Get the ball tonight.
We live and breathe it all day long right here with you on the Fan.
How much y'all charge?
Getting ready for football and to crack a few Bud Lights this weekend.
Hey, we're calling the plays, all right?
Shut up, 3, 1, 2, 3.
Denver's football station.
Ain't too much talking to be going on tonight. All about hitting.
This is Drew, Sandy, and Scott.
That's an excellent job. Big freaking play right there, baby.
Here's Drew, Sandy, and Scott.
Welcome back. Hour number three. Drew, Sandy, and Scott on this Football Friday. And we're going to talk to, for folks that go way back at the University of Colorado, they're going to really enjoy this segment.
One of the baddest men alive.
Leon White out of Compton, California, made his way to Boulder, was an all-conference lineman in three different spots. As a center, a guard, you were an All-American, right? All-American, three different spots. Guard, center, and tackle, not necessarily in that order. And then you went on to play in the NFL, got into professional wrestling, got into shoot fighting. What else did you do, Leon?
You know what? I'm the proud owner of 21 world titles around the world. And how do you want to say this? As a 400-pound man, I did things that people haven't ever done in the ring.
He was Van Vader when he wrestled, and Bull, I mean, he had a whole bunch of different, but Van Vader's what everybody, that I always remembered you from. This dude, when I remember him, what are you, 6'5", 6'6"?
Yeah, I wish, yeah.
Well, what are you, I'm 6'3"?
I'm about 6'4 and a little.
Okay, 6'4 and a little. He was 405, 410 pounds when you came in last time.
Legit.
Yeah, and like bench pressing 600, legit.
Yeah, legit.
Would do a backflip off the ropes.
First 400-pounder to ever do a moonsault. And see, you got to understand that ring is 4.5 feet high. The ropes are another 6 feet up in the air, 5 feet in the air. So you're 10 feet in the air with your feet, and then you add your height, so approximately 6 feet. Your head is 16 feet in the air, and you're doing a flip. You're looking down 16 feet doing a flip.
Yeah, you don't want to go that way and do the flip, yeah.
So it's quite
but
a
it was fun. You had a good time, man. You got to see the world because of that, right?
Been around the world 25 times.
Really. Who's who in the Hall of Fame of wrestling, right? The Hulk Hogan wrestling. Have you not fought? You fought them all, haven't you?
All of them, brother. I mean, you know, you name it. There's a slew of Hall of Fame talented wrestlers over in Japan, and they just don't get to mention. They don't have the physical stature to really get on our Hall of Fame list. Antonio Inoki was a very powerful man and a member of the Japanese diet. He's a member of the WWE Hall of Fame. But, you know, Sting, Undertaker, all of them. So it just...
I always liked Undertaker.
Yeah, good man. Big, big talented, big man.
Big guy,
6'7", 6'8", and
you ever fight Big
talented.
John Studd?
Excuse me? No, he was a little bit before my time. Yeah. That would have been a great fight.
So I remember Big John Studd, too.
Yeah.
I shook his hand one time, took my hand. I don't have little hands. He took my hand. His hand, like, went all the way around my hand. I was at a playoff game for the Celtics against Celtics. I was in the layup line scared to death.
And I tell you what, man, Big John Studd was 6'10", and I don't know, legitimately 380, 390, and lean.
Yeah.
But Andre the Giant, you know, legitimate 7'2", 550 pounds. I mean, I'm 6'4", and say right at 400. And if you can be in shape at 400 pounds, I was in shape. Bench pressing, like you said, 600 pounds. And I could take 365 pounds behind my neck and jump press it 15 times. That's legit.
And, run that back again. 365.
Behind the neck jump press, 15. Sets of 15.
Oh, Oh, my God.
And I stood next to Andre, and I just felt like insignificant. I felt like a short Pillsbury Doughboy.
Leon, remember when the Redskins had Andre the Giant for a while in their camp? They were trying to make a football player out of him?
I don't remember that, but that would have been a crazy experiment, yeah.
He's the biggest human being you ever saw?
Yeah, without question. His hand, just phenomenal. And people don't know this, but he had 72 teeth. He was a throwback. Literally in his mouth, 72.
Throwback to what?
Neanderthal time.
Throwback to when humans were...
72 teeth.
Brother. And
that's
his,
a week-long trip
he was
to the
Goliath.
Dentist.
His hand was bigger than your body.
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
I'm looking at you. I mean, literally. It just was crazy to sit next to this guy.
You were the greatest football player, though, of all the wrestlers.
I don't know. There's been some Daniels.
Who is better?
Wahoo's Dr. Death, may he rest in peace, was a great, you know, he was a four-time All-American wrestler at University of Oklahoma, but was an All-American legitimately as an offensive lineman at University of Oklahoma. But, you know, I certainly would be one of them.
And I want to get in your book, too, but I got to go on this. You mentioned shoot fighting. People don't understand it. That they were doing that in Japan 10 or 15 years ago before they started doing the UFC stuff, came big and grew big, and the mixed martial arts stuff. You were doing that basically mixed martial arts stuff in Japan 25 years ago.
Before the UFC, the MMA came out and got big here in America, they were doing shoot fighting over in Japan, and I entered a tournament. I was the world champion for Ted Turner down in Atlanta, which was a big deal. I mean,
you're a good boss, wasn't he?
Well, the checks never bounce, let's put it that way. And you know what? That's a big deal. You represent Ted Turner, and you're known around the world. I mean, you're a worldwide entity. And as the world champion, I entered this tournament against a lot of people's advice. And Leon, you've got too much to risk. I said, I got to know if I could really compete on that level. So I lost some weight. I got down, and again, I'm saying I got down to 390 pounds, and was just crazy, in crazy condition, crazy strong. And Viktor Hashimikov was a legitimate two-time gold medalist from Russia, and he was in it. And I fought him. I wound up after winning and winning, you moved on and on. It was win, lose, you go home, win, you stay.
Fighting.
So I knocked him out straight up. He came to wrestle. I came to fight. And I wasn't going to get in the middle of the ring and wrestle this guy.
Right.
I mean, that's what he did.
But you told me one time some little guy got you by the ankle one time, right?
And they can do that. And I knocked him out, and then Nobu Takada was a kickboxer, shoot fighter, submission expert, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I knocked him out and won that. So, you know, just for myself, because I always felt, you know, that I was legit, real athlete because of my football. You know, I was a high school All-American. I was a college All-American. I played in Super
At different Bowl. Positions.
At all of them.
On the O-line.
In the Hula Bowl, which was the number one bowl game in the world back then. Now, of course, I played in the Hula Bowl in the East-West Shrine, and now it's always the Senior Bowl. You got to go to the Senior Bowl.
Right.
Back then, those were the two. You know, I played every position that day on the O-line and played the entire game at defensive tackle because the Outland Trophy winner from Texas, and I'm not going to name his name.
Oh, come on.
6'4", 300 pounds. And it was a high-round draft pick, but him and I went out that night before, and we stayed too late. And we were coming in, and they were getting taped. And, brother, I selected up and got dressed, and John Robinson, the coach from USC, he just said, Leon, guess who gets to go both ways and play every other guard and tackle on top of center because your boy is sicking out. And I said, uh-oh, tough day, but I did it, man. It was great, a lot of fun.
You know what, I was reading about your background. Before you came to Boulder, you were in Compton, and Compton, you know, fair or unfair, it's always had a history of being a tough town. Tough people come out of Compton. And it's part of your book. Tell us the name of your book.
I don't really have a name right now. I sent over a synopsis. It talks about all aspects and of my life, you know, from the start, from the day I was born. I was 11 pounds at birth. My mother was 4'10". And
no, what? You kidding me?
They had to induce labor at 7.5 weeks because, you know, it just...
Already 11 pounds, though.
Yeah, but I was 11 pounds at 7.5 weeks, and she was 4'10", so something had to give, and it was me coming out. So they got me out of there, and everything seemed to work out fine. I imagine an 11-pound baby being in an incubator, so...
Wow.
But it starts from the times in L.A. and growing up. And really, You know, you talk about Compton and then me moving over to Bell and going to that high school. We didn't lose very many games. You know, we had a very, very good high school football team, and, you know, getting recruited everywhere from SC to Notre Dame. And I, boy, I fell in love with the Mountains. And I think one of the most impressive things about Colorado for me at that time was, you know, we were at a party in the backyard with a kegger of beer, and they were entertaining recruits and one of the senior offensive linemen. And, you know, coming from L.A., the cops pulled up, and I saw the red lights flashing, and, man, I was gone. I was over that fence.
As a recruit.
And gone. Yeah. That's just what you did in L.A. Right. And what happened to Leon? I mean, and I looked over the fence, and, you know, the senior offensive lineman had his arm around the police, and they just came it down. Jesus, this is where I need to come.
Yeah, it's a little different.
Civilized.
Little calm.
This is not bad. I mean, you know, I'm not saying they had a beer with us, but, you know, hey, keep it quiet, making sure things were okay, and great place to live.
You always said football saved your life, right?
Well, it got me out of L.A., and most of my friends are may they all rest in peace, are gone, and we grew up hard and crazy, and, you know, there were you know, it was during that time with the force busing, so we got you know, gang members. Crips, the Bloods, and then the Hispanic gangs, and you know, we never really had a gang. We had groups we didn't hang out with, but, you know, we were forced to unite to survive. And, you know, we had a high school of, you know, nearly 6,000 people, so it was fun. I mean, fun, and you just grew up different. And this opportunity, football, it really did save my life, got me out of an environment where I had no business being.
And you still, we said this before you came on a while ago, you still, golden black goes to your veins.
Brother, I'm a buff, man. Are you kidding me? Win, lose, or draw. These people, they gave me an opportunity, which saved my life.
We had Coach McElwain on from Colorado State a few minutes back. You going to be at the game on Friday? You in town?
I'm not in town, and that's one of my deals. I'm always traveling somewhere, doing something, and
right.
signing. Going to this convention, signing autographs and stuff like that. And
yeah.
So it's hard for me to really justify buying season tickets. I, you know, I'd love to go to every game possible, but it's just I'm gone. You know.
Leon, it's great to see you. You have a great story. And when that book finally has a name, a working title, let us know so we can pass along the information. You also have a product, real quick. You have a product out.
Well, you know what? I got two things I want to shout out.
And please.
Can I take 30
sure.
seconds?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. You know what? Thank you. I'm grateful if you guys come to me this way. I have an exercise device that's patent pending that I invented, and it's lightweight. If we, this round table right here, if I stood in the middle of this table, okay, and ladies and gentlemen, we're sitting at a big round table.
Right.
And if you put a football player to my left, a Denver Bronco, and you put a 55-year-old woman to my right and a 16-year-old kid over here, and a 70-year-old man over here, and all it encompasses everybody. This machine, and I don't know if I'll get in trouble saying this, but it's a portable Bowflex with interchangeable rods. So if you can interchange those rods up, you can accommodate the NFL football player or someone like myself, and then you could bring it down and accommodate the woman. But the device is patent pending. My son's involved with me. We've got the largest manufacturer of sports equipment in the United States that's helping me with this, and we're going to see. We're going to see. And I wanted to mention that, but more importantly, and probably the most important thing I wanted to say today, and something that you would be, you're the only man that does a better wrestling promo than me, and he doesn't do it for a living. He can, if we could get him to cut one, it would be great, because he used to cut them great in the old days. But it's a celeb VM, so they're celebrities, and they're doing voice messages. So you can do a selfie, you can get someone to hold it, and the concept is you get a video request, and, you know, I'm doing 20 a morning, and, you know, I get paid for doing these, of course. They're inexpensive, they're fun, they're fair, but basically they say, hey, it's my friend's birthday, it's my friend's anniversary, cut a promo, he's got bad hair, and so you tell him, hey, from the power of the Rocky Mountains in Boulder, Colorado, I bring you the Prince of Power, for it's time, I said it's time. Johnny, it's Vader time, and so on and so forth. You cut the specifics, and it's going crazy. This company is growing like mad fire, and the Celeb VM is it's a dynamite project. So What you gonna do, Vader, when these 21-inch pythons wrap around your neck and squeeze the life out of your puny brain?
He
can cut a better one, Dad. I mean, I'm telling you.
I got him one time we did a show, and I did one of those to him. We had a great time. And all of a sudden, he leaves, calls back on the phone and goes, I had to get one more because I can't let Hasty stop me.
So oh, he did?
And so he came back and gave me another good one.
Yeah, but he's the only one that's ever been able to out-promo me on an interview. So
I'll say this. And when you get your book done and get it in print, is it starting to get in print? Is it in the final phases, getting right there?
We have a publisher. And
yeah. When all this stuff gets done, you got to come back because I
absolutely.
Know Sandy
we'll give you some more time.
Bit, yeah.
All right. You know what? I'll bring back the device, and that would be fun.
Now you got some posters. Can you sign some of those, and maybe a couple listeners we can hook up with?
Buddy, you know what? How many did I bring here? I got posters, guys. And these.
Yeah, sign them. We'll give them away.
I got Flair and myself on Super Bowl IV back from what? I can't see the date, but it was back in the 90s, and that one's worth about $250.
Well, and I've got these out to people.
I got two of those, and I got one with Sting and I, which would probably be worth more money. And then I've got one of me shoot fighting, and I you can see that I just hit this gentleman.
Knocked the dude out.
Well, he had 53 stitches right in his eye, right down his deal, and blood is everywhere. So
I don't know if you guys can give that one away. That's the real one right there.
And then I gave you
two DVDs.
Two DVDs, and they're like 8 minutes long, and they're a highlight film, so I'll sign them all, and yeah, give them away. That'd be great. I'd be honored.
You know I love you, dog.
I love you, brother.
Miss you.
You look great. You lost a whole person, didn't you?
Lost an eighth grader.
No, you know what? Actually, my weight's the same. I'm just trying to redistribute a little bit.
Well, you did.
I'm trying to.
You did.
Well, I'm not done.
Well, hey, come on! I just compliment you.
I appreciate. Well, no, I told you you look good.
He's strong, but he can't throw around 600 pounds
on
a bench.
Or 275 one arm press.
You know what? That would be the thing we can talk about. I've got that on video to prove it.
We got to watch that during the commercial break.
I pressed 270 pounds on a Olympic machine 3 times. It was 2 years ago, and you know what? I wouldn't believe myself if I was saying it, but I've got it on tape.
There you go.
You know what? I don't have to.
What can you? How old are you now, Leon?
Yeah.
How old are you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not going to ask you a third time. So I'll just say this.
Reaching distance, very much.
Right. How much can you bench press right now?
A lot. I'm still real strong. My joints have stayed good, and there's things you can do for that. But my military is a lot better than my bench now. Like I said, the one arm, 270 pounds, 3 reps.
That's stupid, Leon. That's not crazy. Right. That's stupid. There's freakish and then there's stupid, and that falls into the stupid category. Hey, listen, your son, a lot of people remember because he played for Logue's. He played for Dave.
All-American, high school All-American.
Exactly. Went to University of Oklahoma.
At one of your positions, right?
At center, yeah.
What's
he
doing now? Because some people texted and that either saw him played against
real
him
quick,
or whatever.
He got a great degree from University of Oklahoma.
Yeah. Right.
And, you know, you got to be a good football player to get a scholarship there.
Yeah.
And I had him all, you know, from 8 years old, I said, Jesse, you think you want to wrestle? Because, I mean, if you do, we should start now. And I don't want to force you. And his mother, of course, was, hey, don't touch this kid. I don't want him ever to get in a wrestling ring. But I was leaving it up to him. He said, no, Papa, I'm going to use my brain. So he waits all the way till he graduates from college. All of a sudden, he wants to wrestle. And I thought, look at all the time we wasted. We could have, you know, because Jesse's legit. He was a 470-pound bench wrestler in high school, number one center in America. He could have really done something then. So I started training him, and then I got him a job over in Japan, a little company I was running over there, and I had a sponsor. And he came over there. We were doing great. We were playing catch-up, and then the WWE called. And, boy, he just, you know, that was it. He's, Papa, sorry, I'm gone. You know, got a better deal type thing. And have mixed emotions about that because I told him it was a mistake, not because he was leaving me, but because it was a mistake. It was too soon. And then he did a ACL. And he hurt his back, and you know what? I'm so proud of him, and he bounced back from that, you know, leaving that environment with the WWE and all those hopes and dreams, and he's in Dallas, the pharmaceutical salesman, he's driving a new car, he's making $75,000 a year as commission, single guy, he's living the
life.
Single
guy, happy,
Wow, and no bumps, no pain, so, you know what? He's got a great future, but thank you for asking. He was the number one center in America for Dave Logan, and... two state championships.
Yeah.
They they really did something. And you know what? Their running back, Greer, I believe it was.
Yes.
Yep. Just a fantastic running back. But he did this kind of like 2-3 steps to the right, took that pitch, and cut back right off Jesse's butt, man. And, you know, Jesse could cut that front side one technique.
Right.
And obviously, if people don't know what that means, if you're a center, it's in that front side gap.
You shade it off the center.
Yeah. To the play sides, so Jesse could make that cut, and he'd come back for 20, 30 yards of pop. He'd hit it so quick, and with the ability to have a center of that nature, you know, Dave's a pretty smart man. He saw that.
He knew that. Yeah. Hey, how we asked, because we got the Rocky Mountain Showdown coming. How does CU get back? Are they on the right path?
You know, I'm a Buff diehard, and I hope so. But you know, let's face it. I mean, from a coaching aspect, in my opinion, my humble opinion, you can only do so much. I mean, there are good coaches, there are great coaches, you know. But what we had in our day with Logs and all those first round picks, I mean, you know, Charlie Davis and J.V. Kane and Bo Matthews, I mean, you know, and it just kept going on. Hasselbeck, I could name 30 of them like that. Mike Spivey and Tom Perry, all these great athletes that we had in that era. You know, it was the ability to recruit. And legally, you know, we had Bob Six, the chairman of the board and majority stockholder of Continental Airlines.
Continental, yeah.
Okay, and you know, so he drove on campus, you know, in his limo, and it was, Leon, are you interested in coming to University College? Yes, sir. And how'd you like to work down in Los Angeles? And you could put a suit and tie on, be an agent. You can throw bags. You can work in the cafeteria. And I kind of said, the cafeteria sounds good to me.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, but you could fly legally.
Yeah.
And so we loaded up. We had more first-round draft picks, more second-round, more draft picks overall during that era than USC, and that's saying something.
Who is J.V. Kane? Who was – there were some guys there.
J.V. Kane, when I got there, man, that team, Charlie, it was just loaded.
Now, weren't you on that team? Weren't you there – wasn't that one year, Sandy will know because he's our historian, that, like, the Big Eight hit were like 1, 2, and 3.
1, 2, and 3. Oh, in early
the, seven. I wasn't there then.
Early no, seven. That was a little before your
that
time.
That was a little before my time, but that group was recruited by Crowder and Robert
yes,
Six.
Yes, absolutely.
And then I came in, and there was another bunch right behind him. It was 75 with Logs as a senior. I mean, God, we had Billy Waddy. He's just, again, I can't name them all. All the Billy Waddy and Logan and Hasselbeck Tight. We had 3 first-round draft picks off the first line. Mark Concar and Peter Brock. And,
right.
And these guys were all either throwing bags or wearing a suit and tie for Continental. And legal, yes, up front, yes, everything. But that ability to recruit with the big boys is...
Yeah, and they've lost it. They've lost it.
You know, because I'm not going to hit on these coaches and say it's coaching, because these coaches are great coaches.
Do you like the Pac-12 versus the Big 8 for you?
Yeah, I mean, I still like the Missouri and the old system, but, you know, hey.
It's kind of interesting because you grew up in Southern California. So
I'm a dinosaur. I never thought the Pac, the Pacific.
Pac-8.
I, you know, other than SC, I never was really impressed with it, but, you know, it's evolved like
it's not,
else.
You know what, Leon, it's not you, because it was always a finesse conference, and quite frankly,
cities.
It's still more of a finesse, throw it around conference, and you grew up in the heart of the country, and it was, we're going to get after you, and we're going to try to run it down your throat.
And you know what, I don't care, any good team, you know what? It starts up front. If you can't move the chains, you can't hold on to the rock, if you don't move the chains in time possession, ball possession, you can't win. Yeah. And you got to give the quarterback a little time to throw, and you got to be able to move the ball. And, you know, it's got to be second and something manageable. And that's what we did. We had some big, strong, you know. I was 315 my senior year and could bench 550 and.
You'd be small today at 315 by offensive line standards.
Not at center, no.
No,
center's
still pretty big.
I'll tell you what, 315 back in your day, that was massive.
Well, you know what? Like you said, there's bigger guys, but not effective at center.
Yeah.
You're 350, 60
I know you're close with this guy, and he was big CU guy forever and ever. Doc Kreese, what's Doc doing?
Last time I heard, Doc was out to UCLA for a while. And was with Rick Neuheisel as their strength, speed, conditioning. And then he caught on with you know, a health spa type thing. Yeah, and I want to get real specific. And, you know, he's coaching.
No, not those to you. That was to the guy behind you.
Oh, he's coaching.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You know, guys with money and teaching them how to stay fit and stuff.
Making money. Cash it in now.
Hey, why not?
Out of the public school system, now he's cashing in.
We'll leave you with this. Colorado's had some legendary strength coaches because Jeff Madden, Mad Dog, was up there. And that was, you know what? He's a big man like yourself. And Doc was a big man.
Those
are guys that could double.
Man, they should never lost.
Bouncer.
Them. No.
He went
should
to Texas.
Never lost him.
He was huge for Mac Brown in Texas.
He was a good recruiter, though. He helped recruit Texas, too.
Trust me. Yeah, Madden was one of the best. I mean, could recruit.
Leon, he's like you. He was a 600-pound bench guy, I believe.
Yeah, sure.
Crazy. Leon, it's great to see you, man. Thanks for coming by and recounting some of those old stories. I know some people want those posters. So
I'm going to sign them. Leave them right
here. Yeah, put your John Hancock on those and text line's pretty excited about it. We'll try to give them away over the next several days.
It's time. It's Vader time. Signing off.
Yeah.
And the power of the Rocky Mountains.
Thank you so much, all of you.
You bet. We're late to a break. It's Drew, Sandy, and Scott. That was Leon White, Van Vader. Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Transwest Buick.
Well, it's like this whole bad boy can. We come to bring it to y'all. Me, B.I., Puff, Lock, Black Rob. So if you want to dance, you can.
Drew, Sandy, Scott at 2:34 on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL, Denver's sports station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. It is always a pleasure to welcome to our studios, in this case for the next half hour, as we close out on this Football Friday, the good Dr. Rick Perea, professor of sports psychology, Metro State, University of Colorado. Good afternoon on this rainy Football Friday, Dr. Perea. You are dressed to the hilt and staying dry.
Trying to stay dry, yes. Sandy, but got a few presentations today, so I had to break out the French cuffs and my Hall of Fame jacket, I call it. It's the
That's right.
Light tan
right
color.
Not quite the canary yellow of the Hall of Fame, but close to that. At this stage of the preseason, what do you make this week of the Bronco opponent tomorrow night, the Houston Texans, also spending time on the practice field with the Broncos for 3 days this week? Good thing, bad thing, somewhere in between?
Yeah, I think you can frame it from both angles. I think it's a good thing because you get reps against different, you know, different blood. You get to see different schemes. That's the question for me. How vanilla is it? What type of pressures and blitzes are they showing and bringing? So it's good from that sense, but it's bad from the sense of you've got 3 days back to back, and then you get a break for a day, and then you play them. You know, I just wouldn't want to play against the same guys like that for 3 days, and then come take a break and play them one day, because I think you get, again, kind of saturated in what they're doing. I'd rather just kind of do our scheme. Because I know when I was a free agent with the Broncos, we did that with the Houston Oilers in training
camp. I remember
that
back in '83.
Yeah,
right?
And I'll never forget because I remember trying to tackle Earl Campbell. That was.
You need Is there a story along with that?
Yeah.
Other than the fact you survived.
I survived. I was a two.
You did a suit now though.
I was a 227-pound linebacker, and he was about 220 below the waist. So
yes,
you know,
monster thighs.
Yep, absolutely.
Monster thighs. How does a guy, an athlete? I know you guys were just talking about this last week with Houston here. These last 10 days of camps more mental than it probably is even physical.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we were just talking about that with Sandy. Is you know playing you know got the Texans in here for 3 straight days, and then you take a break, and then you got them. That's more mental because, again, it's about being able to prepare yourself for different schemes and different fronts, you know, with a three-man front or four-man front and the different coverages they play. That's a big mental thing. But you're right, man. They're right on the end of camp, and I know they've officially, quote-unquote, broke camp, but it still is the mentality of camp until they get done with this third game, and then – you know, then they got the fourth one that comes up, I believe, on a Thursday, and then they'll break. But, yeah, this is a real tough time, again, especially for, you know, the guys trying to make the team. They're constantly wondering, you know, am I going to have what it takes to make the team? So it becomes a real mental struggle and challenge for them at this point.
Peyton Manning on Tuesday Didn't like the practice.
Right.
Said so.
Yep.
Coming off the field Wednesday, Peter King, writing on SI.com, made mention of walking past Adam Gase, asked him how he was doing. He said, well, up until an hour ago, I was fine. J.J. Watt just blew up a practice.
Yeah. Well, you know, those
talk about the psychology and what's behind those two statements.
Well, you know, you brought up Peyton first. Let's look at Peyton. I mean, psychologically, he is where he's at for a reason. You know, when I do presentations, I do a lot of presentations of motivational speaking. And one of the things I talk about, you look at Peyton Manning physiologically, you know, he doesn't run well. You know, his arm strength has never been in the top five in the league. But the guy mentally processes in the heat of the battle, and we call that cognitive processing, probably better than any quarterback I've ever seen. And that's really all mental. But he puts a lot of pressure on himself, and he leverages himself. So when he says that, you know, we got our butt kicked, did they really? Probably not. But enough to be able to say, hey, wait, no, that's not who we are. That's not what I'm about. And then you go to Gase. You know, Gase is kind of one of these young, fresh, cutting-edge minds in football that has high expectations too. And so I think those two paired together are quite a dynamic duo, if you will, in terms of producing an offense that really – can give a defense a lot of things to defend, and really, from a mental standpoint, kind of a real headache. Because I'll tell you what, when you defend Denver's offense, they're a multiple-look offense now. They're an offense, and this is the key, Sandy, they're an offense now that can get 3 yards when they need to get it. And the key will be as if Denver's defense can stop that third and three when they need to stop it.
Do you see this team, I know we haven't played any real games yet, but do you see them different already than maybe you saw last year? Because everybody talks about, and the stat goes back, that teams that get blown out like they did in the Super Bowl, even getting back to, you know, playoffs.
Even get back to the playoffs can be a challenge.
Can be a challenge.
Yeah. Over the last 40 years, they haven't gone back to the Super Bowl and won it the next year.
Yeah. Answer your question, Scotty. I absolutely do. I have seen the top people in this organization go back and say, how do I get better? They didn't sit there and say, okay, we got to the Super Bowl. We're almost there. Let's just keep doing what we're doing. No, the top people in this organization have really went back and reflected and said, how do I get better? And you got to love that. You know, and I'm talking about from players to coaches, they're really reflecting on how they can get better. So I think it is a different look. I think it is a different mentality. You know, when I look at offense and what they're trying to do, you know, I don't think they'll surpass the records that they had last year. But I think they'll have a better offensive football team that can get the 3 yards when they need to get them and then go deep into the playoffs, control the clock a little bit, possess the ball, and, you know, deploy a little nasty, to be quite honest with you.
You've always made the point that the psychology of defense is centered on nasty.
Right.
Super aggressive.
Yep.
Bells and whistles on the offensive side.
Right.
You make the point when the symbolic representation is black shirts. That means the Nebraska defense.
Right, right.
Air Coryell.
Right.
One of the more celebrated offensive attacks of all time, or at least of recent memory.
Right. And I think that's an interesting psychology. The way it's framed is that when a defense is really good, they're black shirts. They're tough. They're aggressive. But when an offense is great, you know, we name them almost like after an airline or something. You know, they're just proficient. They're good through the air. And I think one of the things that Denver can do this year is to – take a mentality that on offense, hey, we're going to go after people, and we're going to kick some butt this year. And to have that mentality, we'll line up 3 yards in a cloud of dust is what we used to call it. But I really see them as an offense that might be able to do that. And if they are, then they're going to really be hard to stop.
We'll follow up on that and talk more with Dr. Rick Perea, address some other subjects, perhaps your text comments on the Total Beverage text line at 29588. Sandy Clough with Scott Hastings in studio. Dr. Rick Perea. On your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. Drew, Sandy, Scott, indeed, at 2:48 on your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan, Denver Sports Station, Sandy Clough, Scott Hastings in studio, Dr. Rick Perea. All right, how does that really happen, though? Because you've talked all the time about 13% more energy being exhibited, normal circumstances by defensive players.
Yeah.
They got to be more aggressive, right? Offensive players, assignment football, defensive players react. Personality types generally seem to be, it's your phrase, I think you've used it, more neurotic on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
How do you make an offensive player aggressive if by instinct and temperament and coaching through the years he has not been coached?
Right.
He's been coached to be proficient, not nasty and aggressive.
Sure. And that's one of the things that I've talked about on this program a lot, is that we use personality assessments to really delineate who has a high level of neuroticism. We can really measure that and grade it on a quantitative level. So it's really important to understand that a lot of defensive players, when we do personality assessments on them, they do score high in neuroticism, and that's high in moods, and they have mood swings. It breaks down to the physiology is the sympathetic nervous system is what engages us, the parasympathetic nervous system what cools us down. And we found that studies that defensive players tend to have a highly neurotic state because they have a highly fluctuating nervous system where the autonomic nervous system just engages quickly, much more quickly in them. And that's the mood swings that comes with that neuroticism piece. So offensive players, you know, when they break the huddle, they have an assignment. They may have some checkdowns, and they may be able to ad-lib at times, but defensive players really have, like, for example, gap responsibilities and coverages, but they're reacting to what the offensive player is doing. So it does take approximately 13% more energy to play, but it takes a mentality that's really kind of more of an attacking nature. And we've joked about this for years as an ex-player that a lot of us are quasi-criminals. I mean, we're on the edge of just being in jail. But you get us on the football field and we can do, you know, a lot of damage.
The offensive players are the guys you bring home to mom.
Right, exactly. You know, the offensive linemen are the guys that you want mom to meet, and they're very nice and controlled and regulated. And we see this, too, when we do personality assessments on offensive tackles and offensive guards, that they're not nearly as neurotic as some of the defensive players. The one position that does differentiate is running back. Running backs tend to have high levels of neuroticism as well. And which makes sense, too, because, again, they're very highly they're required to change a mental focus quickly, and that is required in that high neurotic state.
This probably isn't where you are going or where it means, but when you start talking about neuroticism, I'm thinking, well, women ought to be great at football.
Oh, man.
You want to touch that, that one?
That was Scott Mason who said that.
I mean, some. I mean, it would boot swing, flexibility. You know, if they could just schedule a game, hey, if they only could play once a month,
you know
they'd
what?
Be outstanding.
You know what? That's a great point, Scotty. I work with Metro women's basketball team, and Tanya Jave is the coach there. She played under
great
Pat Summitt at Tennessee.
Great coach.
Yep. But, you know, when I work with the girls' team, they are nasty. I mean, I'm serious. When in practice, there's more fights and there's more name calling and literally hair pulling in practice than you see on the men's team. So that's a great point. You know, we don't know because there's no college women's teams, but you're right. I mean, there's a high need for a certain level of mood swings to really be engaged at the football level. And I think about people like Lawrence Taylor that excelled. And the thing, you know, Lawrence was a good athlete, but he wasn't the best athlete. But the thing that Lawrence had is he had that real high level to turn it on at a really high level, but then also he could come down. So he was I've never done a personality assessment, but I would surmise that he's fairly high in neuroticism.
But you mentioned running backs, and we think back, Jim Brown, run over people,
right.
Never go out of bounds.
Right.
Earl Campbell, you mentioned earlier,
yes.
He'd run you over.
Absolutely.
Wouldn't go out of bounds. Franco Harris might run out of bounds.
Yeah.
Earl Campbell and Jim Brown never would.
Right. You know who I think of when you said that is Herschel Walker. When Herschel was at Georgia, he'd run over you, around you, through you. But then he got in the league, and I know how it is because I've heard players say this. They said, no, if you run like that, you're not going to last very
right.
long. And so later on in Herschel's life, he would run out of bounds. And Herschel's had some issues with some mental health stuff as well.
Right.
So, yeah, there's a mentality that it takes to play certain positions in the NFL. And what we need to do better as people who really select players in the draft is to understand how personality assessments can really give us a window into their covert behavior.
And also being able to turn it on during those 60 minutes of game time
yep.
or the hour and a half of practice time or whatever it is.
Right.
And now as soon as you step across that line, being able to turn it up and,
yeah.
and adjust and be a regular. And some guys are really good at the one not very good at the other.
Right. And, you know, being a former defensive player myself, I get the nasty piece on defense. But I really, what I'd love to see in the coming years is offensive coordinators and, you know, offensive line coaches and running back coaches take more of an aggressive mentality that you're attacking the defense as opposed to just execution. Because execution gets this mindset that, okay, yeah, we're going to do what we're supposed to do assignment-wise, but what about lining up and just going after people and just really being able to have that attacking nature? And I think you can be an offense like Denver's that throws it around the yard a fair amount and still be a very attacking-oriented offense. But I think it's set at the top, the climate and the culture of that expectation, and then the players can carry it out.
Adam Gase has that.
He does.
Adam Gase absolutely has that kind of attacking. Yeah. You know, if they score 40, let's score 50.
Yeah. He's a guy that just, I mean, I'm continually impressed by him because, again, he's continually searching for ways to get better. And he's going to be, in my opinion, one of the great coaches in the future.
Head coaches,
because he is so thirsty. He's what we call in the psychological world, he's full of psychological thirst. And that means that he's always searching for ways to get better, not only physiologically, but mentally and emotionally too. And people like that, they excel at high levels in the corporate world, in business, I mean, in spirituality, you name it. But those kind of people excel when they have that continual thirst, because there's a lot of people that obtain success and they're like the wolf climbing the hill. They get to the top of the hill, they start to relax. And when you start to relax, that's when people catch up on you. And I don't think that'll happen to Adam Gase.
I may have made an error recently when we got together on the golf course and you had a chance to see firsthand how physically and, more importantly, psychologically inept I am under those circumstances.
That may have been
a tactical error on my part.
No, let me tell you, for all the listeners out there, Sandy is one of the most systematic, methodical players I've ever seen.
Good. Yes,
and,
he is.
And
I played with him twice. Yes, he is.
It's called slow, what Scotty is trying to say.
But he's very consistent. He's very consistent. He hits it straight all the time. He's not hitting it 300 yards off the tee, but he's very systematic and consistent. I'll tell you what, if I could play like that, Sandy, more often, I would love to. So we'll have to play again sometimes, and this time we'll bring Scotty out.
That's right. That's right.
Listen, I'm not
for in-depth psychological study, Mr.
Yeah,
Hastings.
Yeah, well, that is real in-depth. If my game's not going right, I'm saying, dude, let's get her up and hit it quick as we get this thing over with. I'm not wasting my time in frustration.
It's always a pleasure, Rick.
Thank you, Sandy.
Good to
and
see
Scotty.
You.
Great to be here, guys.
All right, and we will leave you. Make way for the drive upcoming next. As we continue on Football Friday, this is your home for the best live and local coverage of the Broncos and the NFL, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.